Thank you. Hello. I believe it was Schopenhauer who said, Cleo, the muse of history, is as thoroughly infected with lies as a naughty lady with a social disease. And I say, how do you know, Schopenhauer? I should point out that Schopenhauer, as rewritten by the evil Radio 2 censor, who arrogantly thinks he knows better than Schopenhauer. Take a look inside your own head, Radio 2 censor man. You're the strange one here. Well, if Schopenhauer was correct, then that was then, this is now, acts as an historical sheath, protecting you from the lies, while simultaneously numbing any enjoyment you might get from the experience. But at least we're more responsible than Parsons and Naylor's pull-out sections. That's just reckless. But don't worry, we are prepared to give you unprotected aural relief in the form of our sensational beat combo. It's Christian Riley and Bubonic Plague.
Criticizing BBC executives before we found out whether we'd get another series. You BBC slugs.
Yeah, nice one, Christ. You stick it to the man.
I will. I hate the man.
Me too. What's the man gonna do? Stop me going on the radio?
Yeah, probably.
Really? Oh, dear, I'm sorry. I'd just like to apologise if the BBC censor's listening. You're a really terrific person and not at all small-minded or strange in the head, as I might have previously implied.
Rich, you're just making it worse. Anyway, last week you were turned into a skeleton when your skin and flesh were consumed by an acid wind sent by the ghost of King Alfred the Great, who was cursing you for disturbing his bones.
I know, Christian. Do you really think I'd forget something like that?
I'm just doing my usual expositional recap.
Well, I wish you wouldn't. It's bad enough living life as a skeleton whose skin and flesh have been consumed by an acid wind sent by the ghost of King Alfred the Great, without people constantly drawing attention to it and staring and stuff.
I'm sorry. That was insensitive of me.
Yeah.
It must have been a very tough week for you.
Actually, it was great. I made a ton of money trick-or-treating last weekend, and I didn't even have to shell out for a costume. Ka-ching! Plus, I lost 12 stone in weight and won the National Cinema of the Year competition. I've written a diet book as well, like the Atkins diet.
What's it called? The herring diet?
No, an Eskimo writer's already copyrighted that idea. mine's called The Disturbing the Bones of King Alfred the Great So That You're Afflicted by a Curse in Which an Acid Wind Burns Off All Your Skin and Flesh diet. Apparently, most of the top supermodels in the world have been secretly using it for years. We're not here to publicise my book, available in all good bookshops, the perfect Christmas gift for your fat friends and relatives. Like the year my mum and dad genuinely bought me jogging bottoms, a gym membership and a set of scales and nothing else for Christmas. And then expected me to be able to sit down and enjoy Christmas dinner.
That was then, this is now.
Each week on Twitutin, I'm conjoined with two of the finest historical brains in the country, my old history teacher, Mr. Morgan, and the quizzling Brian O'Green.
Hello.
Nanu. So, you've spent the whole week trawling through the history books, the internet, all resources available to find out what things happened between the 31st of October and 6th of November in history. What have you come up with, Mr. Morgan?
Well, the 5th of November, 1605, saw the infamous gunpowder plot in which Guido Fawkes and his friends conspired to blow up the Houses of Parliament.
I think you'll find everyone knows that the gunpowder plot, or 11-5 as it came to be known... was really set up by the government of the time, who used the Ferrari as an excuse to round up and imprison people of an opposing faith without trial.
If only we could think of some modern parallel with that story and something happening in the modern day, then we would be hailed as Rory Bremner-style satirists. We could win a BAFTA award or something.
Yeah, I cannot think of any modern parallel.
No, nor me, no.
Well, look, if it was easy to think of modern parallels and connect two events, they wouldn't hand out BAFTA awards for being able to do it, would they? It's hard to do that.
Wasn't that the original brief of this programme, to do that? You know, look at history and find modern-day parallels.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? Last show, innit? Got away with it so far. My favourite favourite thing about the gunpowder plot is that this is true. When Guy Fawkes was caught in the cellar, surrounded by barrels of gunpowder and firewood, he genuinely tried to get away with his crime by claiming his name was John Johnson. Not the greatest pseudonym ever. They hadn't put much thought into that. Did he think he might get away with it if he lied about his name?
Wait, there he is!
Hold it right there. We've caught you red-handed trying to blow up Parliament. You are in big trouble, sonny. What's your name?
It's, John.
John what?
John... Johnson. John Johnson. My name is John Johnson.
John Johnson?
Yes, John Johnson.
Middle name?
John.
John... John Johnson?
Yeah, John Johnson.
All right. And where do you live?
1 John Street. St Johnston.
In Scotland?
Aye. Okay.
Good. So that's John Johnson.
Yeah.
1 John Street.
Yeah.
St Johnston.
Yeah, so now you've got my real name and my real address. Can I go home to 1...
John Street.
John Street, yeah, and wait for the authorities to come
well,
and question
you. Well, no, not really, Mr Johnson, because first we'll have to torture you so you can implicate all Catholics in the plot. Then you will be eviscerated and have your winky cut off and burnt in front of you while you're still alive.
Ooh, that's a nice touch.
Oh, yeah, we got a sense of humour. Oh, yeah. Then it's out with your heart, and even though you're probably dead, we cut off your head, and... After that, you'll be sent right back to 1 John Street in St Johnston.
Ah.
But the name of John Johnson will go down in history. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they name a bag of jumble roughly arranged into human form that is then burnt after you.
What, really?
Yeah.
Bag of jumble, you say? That sounds great. Look, my name isn't really John Johnson. My name's Guido Fawkes.
Slightly story.
Guido Fawkes? You must think we're stupid, Mr Johnson. I have never heard such a ridiculously made-up name.
No, I'm Guido Fawkes and I come from York.
Oh, come off it! You just thought of a town that rhymes with your stupid made-up pseudonym.
You're not fooling anyone.
This has been a great week in history for anyone who hates the Catholic Church. Not only have we been burning Catholic effigies this week, take that, Catholics, but the 3rd of November 1534 saw the Act of Supremacy in which King Henry VIII declared himself the supreme head of the Church of England. I love King Henry VIII. He lived the dream, didn't he? You show me a man who doesn't want to make himself head of religion, get married 6 times, murder 2 of his wives and get away with it, and I'll show you a homosexual. Now it's time for a song from our house band, Christian Riley and Bubonic Plague.
On the 7th of November 1998, 77-year-old John Glenn, the oldest astronaut in the world ever, returned to Earth. Obviously, there's no talking to him now.
Did I ever tell you about the time I was in space?
Only every other day. Anyway, this is his fictitious story. Here we go.
You took that old space shuttle out for a Sunday drive. You're oblivious to the queue of rockets queuing up behind. Your hearing aids nearly conked out. Mission controller having a shout. Your last gray hair just fell to the floor. You're boldly going where nobody's gone before. Now you're the oldest guy in space. Doesn't it feel great? Your meals are tubes of paste, and there's another tube to deal with your waste. You're gonna miss these crazy days when you get home. Now you're missing your colleagues at NASA, 'cause you're collecting trolleys for Asda. Your reputation's gone up in smoke. The nurses at the home think it's all a big joke. Hey, ground control to Major John, why don't you take your vitamin pills and put your cardigan on? You'll catch a death of cold, 'cause you were the oldest guy in space. And now your back, it still feels great, because your meals are tubes of paste, and there's still a tube to deal with your waste. You love these crazy days at the nursing. You love these crazy days at the nursing. You love these crazy days at the nursing home.
Now, don't get me wrong, I've got nothing against you Martians, it's just they're savages.
Bubonic Plague. Now, over to TV's Emma Kennedy for this week's births, deaths, and marriages.
It's time to find out who got got wet bread or dead with TV's Emma Kennedy.
Hello, I'm TV's Emma Kennedy. You know me. I played an ambiguously gendered Nostradamus on Lee and Herring's This Morning with Richard, Not Judy. Yeah. They never worked on television again. I did! In your face, Herring! Anywho, time to find out who got mated, created, hand cremated. So which historical figures were tucking into cakes and jelly and then sicking it up this week? Halloween 1718 saw the birth of John Montagu, the fourth Earl of Sandwich, most famous for inventing the snack that bore his name, the Montagu, an unpleasant combination involving a Scotch egg baked inside a pie and coated in golden syrup with a secret drawer full of ice cream. Yuck! But not all historical people were being born this week in history. That would just be stupid. Instead, some of them were dying. 5th November 1991, Robert Maxwell drowns. Controversy still surrounds his death. Some people think he was a fat thief who committed suicide. Others think he was a fat thief who was murdered. But stop your wailing and you're throwing yourself on a coffin as it's lowered into the cold, cold ground. Because this week is a time of celebration as some of the great and the good were betrothed. 1st November 1988, actors Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis get married after meeting on set of horror remake The Fly. Sadly, their wedding night was a disaster as Jeff spent the entire evening masticating.
Emma, sorry, I really hate to do this again. I really do. I wanted this item to work this week. I really did. Jeff Goldblum spent the whole evening... What was he was doing?
Masticating.
Masticating?
Yes, masticating.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Jeff Goldblum spent the whole evening vomiting onto his food and then sucking it back up through his proboscis.
Well, ignoring the fact that that isn't what masticating means...
Well...
Why did he do that?
Well, because a fly got into the telepod and Jeff Goldblum was transformed into half-man, half-fly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hadn't realised. The Fly was a true story, was it? It was a documentary film.
Yes.
It all actually happened.
Yes, it's a very moving story.
Well, no, but hold on. Didn't Jeff Goldblum die in the end of that film?
Well, he did in the film. Well remembered, but, you know, not in reality.
Really?
In reality, Jeff Goldblum learnt to live with his man/fly disability, but the people of Hollywood didn't think the truth made a good enough movie, so they forced Goldblum and Davis to shoot an alternative false ending.
Really?
They
didn't feel that the story of a movie star inventing a telepod that actually works,
yeah,
and then melding with a fly, but learning to live as a half-man and half-fly was a good enough film.
I know. No, they thought it would be better if Jeff Goldblum got fused with his telepod and then Gina Davis had to kill him.
OK, well, let's just for fun assume that's true.
Well, it is.
Yeah. If Gina Davis had married this half-man, half-fly version of Jeff Goldblum...
It is true.
Then why was their wedding night a disappointment? Surely Gina Davis would have expected her husband to spend the whole night masticating. She was aware she was marrying a fly and so could hardly complain when he, a fly, behaved like a fly. That was her own lookout.
Yeah, but she thought she could cope with it, but she couldn't. That's why they ended up getting divorced.
Don't give me that, Kennedy. I've had enough of you. Get out of my sight, you mawkish harpy.
I'm not mawkish.
You are mawkish. You're one of the original Mawks brothers. You're Mawko Mawks. You shop at Mawks and Spencer's. And your favourite TV show is Supermarket Sweep.
Oh, I love that show.
Get out. Your contract's terminated. What? Until next series.
That was then, this is now. Tomorrow, we hate you. Tomorrow, you're little use to us in our history-based sketch show.
So, Brian, what stories have you got for us?
Well, Richard, on the 5th of November 1935, Monopoly, the world's most famous board game, was launched by Parker Brothers.
The world's most rubbish board game, most like. I hate it. It's got to be the worst board game ever invented. Not only is it a waste of hours of your life, it's also entirely dependent on luck rather than skill, like in the games I play like Scrabble, which I'm good at. And you pretty much know who's going to win after the first couple of trips around the board, which is why I've invented a new board game, Herringopoly.
Herringopoly?
Hey, it's my game and I can name it after myself if I want. Herringopoly is not only much quicker and thus a better game, it's also a much more effective satire of capitalism. Do you want to play?
Well, yes, I do, but I must warn you, Richard, that I'm not only fiercely competitive, I also always win everything.
Not this time.
Need I remind you that I'm the Shepherd's Bush Master Brain Champion?
No, there's no need, because no one is interested. And anyway, I don't think you'll win this game.
Ooh, I'd love to play. Me and Hillary used to spend most evenings playing board games. Happier days. Hello, Hillary. If you're listening and can leave Mr. Pitt, the geography teacher, alone for 1 second, you filthy...
Mr. Morgan!
Oh, I'm so sorry. Can I be the dog?
No. No, because there is no dog. Oh. The pieces are different in Herringopoly. The person whose name is most like the name Richard Herring gets the Richard Herring piece.
Oh, that's you, Richard. Your name is identical to that name. Very well done.
Thanks very much. All the other players take one of the nameless, faceless proletariat pieces, which are forever draped in chains.
They're all the same. How can we tell which one of them is ours?
It doesn't really matter, Brian, because in Herringopoly, whoever is the Richard Herring piece starts the game by being born into a wealthy family and inheriting all the properties without having to do a day's work in their life. Each property comes complete with 20 overpriced hotels. As there's no competition, he can charge what he likes.
It's a Monopoly.
No, Mr. Morgan, it's a Herringopoly. Any similarity between my game and Monopoly is entirely coincidental.
It's played on a Monopoly board with the Mon crossed out and Herring written over it in Biro.
That is entirely coincidental. Take your turn, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, I rolled an 11.
Pall Mall. That's mine, I think. Ah, yes, there it is. For a night in my 5-star hotel, you owe me £39,000.
But we only start with £15,000.
Well, I'll take that from you and then arrange a high-interest loan at compound rates, which will increase to hundreds of thousands of pounds in just a matter of a few years.
This really is like real life, isn't it?
Yeah. And you're out of the game.
Oh, what bad luck. Still, it's a brilliant game and I can't wait to play it again.
Brian, your go.
10. Just visiting.
You were lucky this time. I only have to be lucky once. Now my turn. 7. Take a chance.
Oh, I'll read it. Ah, go to jail. Go directly to jail, where you'll be put in solitary confinement, fed with rotten bread, and have to drink water out of the toilet, and be slowly consumed by syphilitic rats. You have lost the game.
Aha!
Hold on, finish reading the card.
Unless you are Richard Herring. In which case, take all the remaining money from the bank, throwing it in the air, shouting, I'm rich, and I hate the poor.
I'm rich, and I hate the poor. Your go, Brian. Whilst we finish off the game, Mr. Morgan, present an item of some kind.
Love to. 2nd of November, 1755, saw the birth of unpopular Queen Marie Antoinette. But was she really as bad as the history books would have us believe? Let's find out in a section of the show that I like to call What Really Happened.
No, it's What Really Happened.
What really happened?
No, I'm trying to sort of start a kind of catchphrase thing going. It's 4 A's, 5 L's, What Really Happened.
What really happened?
That was then, this is now.
What really happened?
Marie Antoinette, enemy of the revolution. Ooh. You have been found guilty of crimes against the French Republic, and I, Robespierre, declare you must accept the punishment that...
So sorry, I don't understand. Why exactly must I die? What is it that I'm supposed to have done?
Oh, your crime is a heinous one. Somebody told you that the peasants were starving and that there was no more bread. And you said to them, let them eat cake.
Oh, cake, let them eat cake.
But what's so bad about that? Cakes are lovely. I was trying to be nice.
Well, when you put it like that...
I mean, I could understand your problem if I said, let them eat soil, or let them eat their own babies, or, God forbid, let them eat Ginster's pasties. But I didn't say those things. I said, let them eat cake. You like cakes, don't you, everyone?
Yes, I do.
I like cakes.
Not ones with marzipan.
Was it a cake with marzipan?
No, it wasn't. There was no marzipan at all, none.
Then I like cake.
See? Everyone likes cake. Who wouldn't? Cakes are fantastic.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to would do was to share the delicious cakes with you all, and for that, I'm supposed to die.
It is not fair.
Marie Antoinette is great.
She wanted us to have cake.
No. She is an enemy of the revolution, and death is a just reward.
Actually, I've got a cake with me. It's a big cake with chocolate sauce and nuts and marshmallow and a secret drawer in it filled with ice cream. I'll share it all with you now if you want.
Yay!
Cake for all.
Screw the French Republic. Marie Antoinette for queen.
Si, Marie Antoinette.
Yay. Citizens, would you give up the revolution for a piece of cake?
But of course.
In an heartbeat.
As long as there's no marzipan on it. Or if there is marzipan, it can be easily picked off without leaving a marzipan residue.
Oh, this is terrible. Something must be done. Well done, Marie Antoinette. I am glad you are queen, but I think we should divide the cake fairly. You know, égalité, liberté, fairly. Would you like to use my guillotine to cut it up?
Oh, thank you, Robespierre. That's very decent of you.
Ah, it's my pleasure, you know. You just place it there.
Just here.
Yeah, just left a bit. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just right a bit. Yeah, just there. Okay. Oops! Oh, sorry, everyone. My hand slipped.
You killed our beloved queen!
Slashed right down the middle.
She was a candle dans le vent.
No, look. I have got the cake now. If you all support me and the French Republic, you know what I'll let you have? I'll let you have cake.
Yay!
Yay!
Robespierre!
Let him live. He has cake.
Cake.
Oh, hang on. There is a little bit of blood on it.
Any marzipan?
No.
Yeah, it's okay then. Come on. I'm French. I'll eat anything. Come on.
And that's what really happened.
What really happened? You're not doing it right.
What really happened?
Look, back to this game of Herringopoly. You seem to owe me £1 million, Rich, which I think means that I have won the game.
Oh, well done, Brian. If I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I wouldn't have believed it.
That's not possible. There's no way that the Richard Herring character can lose.
Need I remind you that I'm the Shepherd's Bush Master Brain Champion?
Oh, shut up with your face. Anyway, that's nearly the end of the series, and in recognition of that fact, I've arranged a celebratory bonfire and fireworks display right here in the University of London Student Union where the show is recorded.
An indoor bonfire? Is that wise?
Was it wise for the Light Brigade to charge into the Valley of Death? Was it wise for America to enter the Vietnam War? Was it wise for the people of Pompeii to build their town directly under an active volcano?
No. None of those things were wise, and they all led to disaster.
Look, if a grown man can't build a 20-foot bonfire in a student union made primarily of wood, with a fire exit that's been blocked by 16 barrels of petrol, and with everyone in the room wearing clothes that are made out of cheap nylon and or paper, then Osama bin Laden has already won, my friend. Won, I tell you. Do you want to live in a country like that? Because I don't. It's bonfire weekend, and every man jack in Britain has the right to light a bonfire wherever he likes, by law. Stand back, Mr. Morgan. I'm going to light it now.
Just think maybe you should rethink. You haven't got any contingency plans if things go wrong.
Did Tony Blair's have any contingency plans for if things went wrong in Iraq?
No, and that led to disaster.
Check on. It's already lit. And the fireworks that are randomly scattered inside it should go off any second. It's just a bit of harmless fun. Where's TV's Emma Kennedy? She'd like this mawkish combination of pleasure and pain.
She said she was feeling a bit tired and went for a lie down somewhere.
Oh, saints preserve us. She's curled up like a hedgehog inside the bonfire.
Oh, no! She only wanted somewhere warm and out the rain. We're burning her alive!
Ah, help! Help me! This is worse than the critical roasting I got when I was in the Real Holiday Show and Gary Bushell said he couldn't imagine anyone with less personality. Ah, my legs!
No! No! Someone save her! I love her.
You love TV's Emma Kennedy? Why have you spent every single week of the series criticising her jokes, shouting at her, calling her mawkish and making her cry?
I was flirting with her, you know, it was only playful. Chicks love that kind of stick.
Oh dear, she's dead.
Oh, TV's Emma Kennedy. She was a candle in the wind.
Yes, probably not the best choice of metaphor in the circumstances.
Well, on the positive side, it does save us having to build a guy.
I don't want to interrupt the mourning process, but predictably, the indoor fire is out of control and we are all certain to die.
Oh, dear. Maybe the band could play some soothing music as we await our doom, like, you know, on the Titanic.
Sorry, Rich, they've already done a bunk out the back window before the conflagration engulfed the entire wooden stage.
I hate Christian. He gets all the breaks and the girls. I'm not having him in the second series.
Yeah, I don't think there will be a second series.
What, because all that stuff I did about the censor?
No, the fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot. Well, ironically, it looks like we ourselves are history.
Yeah. That is ironic.
It is.
Yes, that's very good. Yes. The irony has quite cheered me up.
Anyway, that was then, this is now. Hope you have a better afternoon than we're having. Careful.
Who's going to do the closing sig music?
Oh, we'll have to. Bagsy drums.
Oh, I want to do drums.
I'll do keyboard.
Okay, look, let's give it a go. One, two, one, two, three, four. Good, keep it on, guys. Look, it looks like Emma's okay after all!
That was then, this is now. It was written by and starred Richard Herring, Emma Kennedy, Danny Robbins, Dan Tetzel, Christian Riley and Nova Lounge. You were Damien Caldwell, Charlie Round Turner and Martin Kane. With additional material by Mark Daly, Toby Davis, Chris Bell, Richard Ward, Colin